Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Now I feel like I'm a moderator here, Ron. We have two very prominent men on the line. Mr. Jeff Perlman, who just came out with a book called Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. I think Jeff Perlman's one of the better sports authors of all time. His book about the Lakers I just read about, a couple months back, Jeff, and it was unbelievable, all the stuff that you pulled out of people who were around that team. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. That's very kind of you to say.
Absolutely, man. And the other person we have here is Mr. Ed Bouchette, and from the Post-Gazette, our Steelers insider. We all know him. And Ron Cook is standing across from me, and let it be known that Ron and Ed were competitors way back when, 1984, covering the Pittsburgh Maulers. Ed, how are you?
I'm better than I was in 1984, I think, Joe.
No, you're not, Ed. That was the best year of our careers. I think we've agreed that on that, haven't we?
Yeah, that was fun. That broke me into covering football at the Post-Gazette and doing what I'm doing now. And I have you to thank for it, Ron. Hello, Jeff.
Hey.
Jeff, I'm interested what you found out about Donald Trump's role in the league and the USFL, because he owned the New Jersey Generals way back then. What was his role in the league, to start it, to finish it, perhaps?
Well, he bought the New Jersey Generals after the first season, 1980, after the 83 season. And in the lead-up to buying the team, it was a spring league, as all you guys know, and it was a good league. Had its flaws, but it was a good league. And in heading into the second season, he bought the Generals, and he told anyone who'd listen how great the USFL was and how excited he was to get involved. And as soon as he got involved, he set out to ruin it. I mean, he set out to make it a fall league. He wanted to get in the NFL. He saw the USFL as a ticket to the NFL. Not that long after buying the Generals, he arranged a meeting with Pete Rozelle, the commissioner of the NFL, without telling anyone else. And he basically told Rozelle, I'll do whatever it takes to get an NFL team. I don't really care about the USFL. If I have to kill this league, I'll kill this league. I just want an NFL franchise. He really did. And, when you talk about the demise, it's a long, long story. But when you talk about the demise of the USFL, it goes straight to Donald Trump and his efforts to get an NFL franchise.
Ed, correct my memory or not, did you not interview Trump at some point?
Yeah, I interviewed him on the phone, Ron, just about what Jeff's talking about. He was more than willing to get on the horn with any beat writer to push his fall agenda, and that's what my story was. And I wrote how if they go to the fall, the Maulers are dead, and which is exactly what happened. Why they were only a 1 year wonder. Once they moved to the fall, they weren't going to compete with the Steelers in this town, and they merged with that team from Philadelphia, and they weren't going to compete with the Eagles, so they moved to Baltimore, which at the time didn't have a team.
Ed Bouchette of the Post-Gazette, Jeff Perlman, who just came out with a book chronicling the rise and demise of the USFL. How about there's a number of insane stories from that league. How about one from each of you guys, Jeff on the league itself and Ed on the Maulers?
Well, I mean, there are millions. So one of my favorites is heading into the first season, the Boston Breakers were excited to come to terms with Dave Remington, the reigning Outland Trophy winner from Nebraska. It was a huge, huge signing for the league. It was a big coup for the Boston Breakers. And they agreed to terms with him on the phone. And they flew him to Boston for a huge press conference and officially signed the contract. And they sent their officials to the airport to pick him up. And he's not there. And it turns out the guy on the phone who they thought was Dave Remington was just someone playing a prank on them. And it wasn't the real Dave Remington. Dave Remington had no idea any of this was going on. And they actually had to announce, instead of that they signed Dave Remington, that someone had pulled a prank on them, and it wasn't the real Dave Remington. So that was the Boston Breakers' introduction to Boston.
That's beautiful. Ed, you got a Mahler story?
Well, Ron will agree with this. They're the biggest story, and a ton of them happened in Memphis when they played down there on a Friday night. The NFL had ordered Eddie DeBartolo to stay away from the Maulers. His dad, quote-unquote, owned them. Eddie owned the 49ers. But they were both in the Memphis press box that day. And my boss, Bruce Keiden, at the time, had arranged with the GM of the Maulers, George Heddleston, to wait. This had never happened ever in the NFL. Wait until I was finished writing my story on deadline for me, because I was flying back with them. And they lost a terrible game. Reggie White was a member of that Memphis Showboats team. And so the PR guy, Bill Keenest, he later became the PR guy for the Lions for a long time, he come up to me and says, Ed, are you done yet? When are you going to be done? I said, Bill, your boss and my boss made these arrangements. He said, I know, but they're waiting for us on the bus. So I finally get down. I go down, get on the bus, and the GM and the president are standing outside that bus, and I got the dirtiest look. We get on the bus. The bus is going through Memphis. The lights don't work on the bus. We finally get on the plane. We have to sit on the plane anyway and wait for the equipment to come. So I wasn't the delay. They get on the plane. They fly home. The next morning, I pick up the paper, and Ron Cook wrote, they were celebrating like they won the Super Bowl. They turned around 2 days later and fired Joe Pendry as their coach.
Ah, the memories, Ed, the memories. You know, one of my favorites real quickly was there was a couple of teammates on the team. Bruce Huther was a linebacker, and Mark Rao was a tight end from West Virginia. And somehow they got into a fight away from the football field. I don't know if it was Rao, Clocks, Huther, or whatever. So Ed and I are competing. I think I caught up one of the two. I don't know which one. And he gave me the story. And then Ed called up the other guy, and they were together, and he gave Ed the story. So we had it covered from every angle, Ed. I'll never forget that.
He broke his jaw, if I remember. Rao broke Huther's jaw. And when I got Huther, you got Rao. And when I got Huther, he's explaining the whole thing to me and says, why do we have to make Mark Rao out to be the bad guy? He just broke his jaw.
That's awesome. Actually, I just
want
to
say the funny thing about that. An argument and got into a fight. They were driving home and drinking.
The Maulers actually cut Huther while he was in the hospital. They actually cut him while he was in the hospital.
Jeff, should this league have survived? Did it have enough star power? And was it well conceived enough, at least at the beginning, to make a run?
Well, I think if it had held on a little longer and hadn't followed Donald Trump into fall, I think ultimately if you look at the 87 NFL strike and sort of all the anarchy that happened, I think you would have had a bunch of players, massive defections to the USFL. And I think ultimately a couple of those teams, Jacksonville, Memphis, maybe Birmingham, Oakland, Baltimore, would have been absorbed into the NFL. But they really rushed everything and did some really stupid things.
I remember the football being pretty good, Ed. I don't know if you do or not. It was very entertaining to me to watch. Now, I know the Maulers went 3-15, and towards the end, I think Sam Clancy from Pitt was the only guy that was still talking to us at the end. But I found the games entertaining.
Well, the Maulers also were competitive, and you asked about star power, Joe. They had a bunch of stars, including the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, Mike Rozier. They signed him right after the Orange Bowl, and may have signed him during the Orange Bowl, for all I know. And they got a quarterback from the Cowboys. Huther was a linebacker from the Cowboys. They had some decent players on that team.
Ed Bouchette of the Post-Gazette joining us, and Jeff Perlman, who has authored a book called Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. Highly recommended. Tell us about the title. I'm imagining you could get tickets for a dollar. Yes, Jeff?
Because the lawsuit, they ended up suing the NFL for an antitrust violation, and the USFL actually won the lawsuit, but they were only given a dollar by the jury, because what the jury said is that the NFL was had a monopoly on fall television, and the jury said, yeah, you guys are actually correct, but it's your fault. So we're going to give you the win, but we're only going to give you a dollar. And I just want to say real quick about the Maulers that I love. The best game ever, maybe in USFL history,
is Cliff Stout returns to Pittsburgh as the quarterback of the Birmingham Stallions. And it's the Maulers' biggest crowd in the 1 year history of the Maulers. I think 55,000 turn out to Three Rivers just to pelt him with ice chunks and snowballs.
We were talking about it earlier, Jeff. I'll never forget it. It's still shocking to me that they actually sold out a game. Ed, do you remember that? I mean, the stadium was packed. It was like a Steelers game.
Yeah, they sold it out. And then Bruce Guyton wrote a story, our old boss, that they still had singles left, kind of putting a pin in their balloon, concentrating on that. But you can still find clips, I think, on YouTube, Jeff, of those snowballs flying out and hitting Cliff Stout as he crouched over center.
Jeff, go ahead, Jeff. Sorry.
I was going to say the other thing that's funny is so they got Mike Rozier, the Heisman Trophy winner, which was a huge deal, and it was all fixed. The league actually went up to George Huddleston, who was a GM, and said, if we got you the number one pick, could you sign Mike Rozier? And George Huddleston was like, are you saying if we get the number one pick? Are you saying we could get the number one pick? And the commissioner said, I'm not saying you can and I'm not saying you can't, but if you did, and he's like, yes, we could. And then a few days later, Maulers get number one pick in draft. And they did actually go to the Orange Bowl where Rozier was playing. And terms were agreed to while he was still a college player, and he became a Mauler.
Jeff, Ed mentioned earlier about Eddie DeBartolo Sr., Eddie DeBartolo Jr. You know, it was fascinating. You know, I can't imagine the NFL looked very favorably on the DeBartolo family.
No, they were really upset about that. Really upset about it. And it was interesting because when Trump came along and with the move to fall, like everyone here has agreed, DeBartolo Sr. was aghast. Because the last thing you want to do was go head-to-head against the NFL. It wasn't his goal, obviously, to kill the NFL. And as soon as that came to fruition, he was out, and that was the end of the Maulers. It didn't even get to the point where it was the logistics of how would we have a fall team in Pittsburgh. There's no possible way I'm going out head-to-head with the NFL, so we're done.
Jeff, I think they lost $15 million in that one season as well, Jeff, which back then was an enormous amount.
Also, I love that they shared a training facility. Their actual headquarters, was shared with the Lots of Cots Daycare Center.
Yes, we reminded them that a lot about that.
We'll tell you a quick story about that. It was in Baldwin, right? It was like a daycare center. And the head coach was Joe Pendery. And before the season started, when they came back, they trained in Melbourne, Florida. Joe Pendery called both Ed and I and said, please don't tell people where we're training at because it'll get like Steeler crowds and it'll be very disruptive. Ed, do you remember that? And we went there and word got out where there were. I don't think there were ever more than two people show up to watch a Maulers practice.
And I think one was sunning himself on the hill. One of the spectators. I think he was sleeping.
Ed,
it was an old middle school. That's right. Old middle school.
We appreciate you guys taking the time. Ed, thank you for joining this call. Jeff, what's your next project?
I'm working on a book about the Shaq Kobe era Lakers out here in L.A.
So. Oh, my God. Will it be as salacious as the one about the Showtime Lakers?
No, I don't know. I'm way too early in it to know, but I'm trying.
I'm trying. We appreciate the time, man.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, guys, both.
It was a fun time, man. I think Ed say it, and it was the most fun I've ever had covering a beat because there was something that happened all the time. George Huddleston was a GM, and he was a wonderful man, but probably was in over his head. And we'd show up one day, like they would not try to hide stuff for you. They'd tell you anything. We showed up, one of the star linebackers, I can't remember what his name was, wasn't out there. So we walk over to George and said, George, where's the linebacker? And most guys would have said, well, he has an excused absence, this, that, or the other thing. George goes, I don't know, but I'm sure as hell going to find out. So then the story, the lights go off. We all write big stories about how the linebacker's inexcused away from the team. It happened like that all the time. It was great.
I love that. Now, how many did they get? They got 55 to pelt Cliff Stout with snowballs. How many for their other games?
Not many. That was the one big draw.
Eric, any memories of the Pittsburgh Maulers? Were you a big fan?
I was a fan. Well, I shouldn't say I was a fan. I I agree with Ron. They were a lot of fun. I didn't cover them per se, but I was working in the biz here at the time, and it was like a story every day with them.
Characters.
And I do remember the Cliff Stout welcome home, courtesy of the Snowballs, and the whiskey bottles, Cookie. There were a few of those that were thrown in his direction, too.
They signed Rozier, and I had the story. In Pittsburgh, I had the story. It was before Ed even took the beat. And his agent was Mike Trope, who was like a kind of a smarky, not a good reputation among agents. And like they sign him, and then Rozier denied signing him. He denied signing him. Then Trope said, no, he signed. It was a bizarre week of my life trying to track down Mike Rozier.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.